Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Yeah, and such. So, lots of subjects, so I'm just going to bounce around. Nothing having anything to do with anything else, so who knows what kind of video this will be. But anyway, so something I just observed. And it seems such a silly realization. the word procreation has like pro creation, you know, and it seems kind of sensible to say, yes, I'm anti-creation, yes, or uncreation, you know, some kind of, you know, use of the same word. But it is kind of funny that procreation is literally people who are pro creating. And the argument is, you know, what are you recreating? I mean, it's just, you know, very troublesome to create risk and liability. And so that sort of got me thinking about rights versus responsibilities and which one, you know, which one means something. And so I sort of say that the responsibility part's the bigger part. If you do... If you act responsibly, you probably can't, you know, violate a right of anyone, because it would be sort of built into the definition of responsible behavior to evade right violating. But certainly it would be sensible to be, you know, if you're responsible to say, okay, I'm not competent to be a parent, or, you know, there is too much of a liability, I can't clean it up if it goes wrong. So the responsible thing to do is to not do it. You know, if you were building a nuclear power plant and you thought there was a 10% chance it would melt down, I mean, the responsible thing to do is to say, well, no, I can't build it. You know, because there's just too, the disaster is too great, and it's, can't clean it up, can't fix it, can't undo it, can't reclimate. Can't put it back together again. It's a Humpty Dumpty thing. And so the responsible thing to do is to, you know, not create a liability. And so then that gets into economic stuff, right? Liabilities. So, yeah, maybe I'll do that. Just a little bit of just thinking about the way things are going. And how they've changed the system, you know, in a sense, to hide all of the, you know, the bad debt, frankly, the unpayable debt, the debt that'll never be paid, that can't be paid, and yet the paper is still purchased as if, because for the time being, anyway. There's some sense of it being not completely useless or valueless. But of course, when you'll need it to be, to have value, it won't have value. So the real trick is there's real assets in the world. You know, this pen, pencil, drawing device. what the hell do you call these things? Marker. Anyway. So it has real value. Now I can own it, and then I have a real piece of value. And, you know, it's a something. Now, if everybody tries to own all the, there's only 100 pens, let's say, and everybody wants one, they want to own something real. They don't want to have cash or some sort of other crap. They want some sort of real asset. And everybody bids the price of this way up. So it gets very expensive to own a pen because everybody has a lot of money and they want some kind of real asset, not the money. And so what the economy has done is create a bunch of imaginary assets. So the most obvious one is the debt, the bonds that the government issues. And so what, instead of purchasing pens, people with money buy the bond because it's going to pay them a little bit back. So it won't be like a pen that's useless if it doesn't make any money. And it's not as dangerous as buying a company that might fail. So they'll buy the bond, you know, and have an asset that will keep up with inflation anyway. and preserve their ownership right, their right to own stuff. And unlike cash, which is supposed to deteriorate a little bit, you know, die from inflation a little bit every year, so nobody wants to hold it. You want to hold something that goes up in value, not something that goes down in value. So people buy the bonds. Now, the other thing they buy is stocks, okay, you know, and with the hope, okay, that they're going to have the same idea, that except they can make even more money, because it can increase even more. But most of the value is imaginary. So the company could have five pens, you know, it owns five pens, so it's worth something. You know, they have in their inventory five pens, but they're selling the stock, okay, as if the company owned 500 pens. So you're really not getting the same asset value, in the sense that the real hard assets aren't the price you're paid for them. So you really, you know, you paid the price for a whole pen, and all you really own is the top here. You know, that's it. So you don't own real much in real asset. The rest of it's imaginary asset, in the sense, as long as the company is not bankrupt and just doing business, it's rising in value. People want to buy the stock, your stock, and so it rises in value. So you have an asset that, even though it's mostly imaginary, even though they're mostly fake pens or non-existent pens, people will buy them. So it's a good asset, but it's not real. That's the point. So what's happening in the economy is people, the regular citizens, are not paying the bills, so to speak, and they're borrowing the money. And so when they borrow the money, they issue a bond, and somebody to buy the bond basically has to sell pens to do it. So they have to sell something onto the market to get the money to buy the bond. And when they do that, they degrade the price of the commodity they put on the market, and so they create some deflation, because now they're basically liberating more cash to purchase something, okay, but they had to put on the market value to be able to buy the bonds. You can't just buy it with nothing. You have to sell something you have to buy it, because they don't have just cash laying around. And so they just sacrifice one asset for the imaginary asset. And that's the real game, is that some of the assets will be real assets. So now there's more of them on the market, so their price goes down. So the commodity prices go down as the imaginary inventory of the wealthy goes up. And the danger is, okay, that something happens where everybody holding the imaginary assets tries to cash them out for real assets. And so then all of a sudden, you know, a pen that costs 5 cents will cost $500 because everybody wants one. That kind of thing. The hyperinflation kicks in. So they created mechanisms to prevent that. You know, the FDIC insurance was the big one. But the last time they had the big housing bubble, just like we're in now, you know, where the prices are just, you know, very unrealistic. The increases can't be sustained. And the problem with that is, okay, everybody thinks they're getting richer because their house keeps getting more valuable, until it doesn't. You know, and then it makes it even worse, is that because the asset values of the houses go up, people are able to get more mortgaging, they're able to get second mortgages, and you know, and the banks end up holding they end up owning a house that isn't as valuable as the price they thought it was. And you know, in a crisis, that's what it turns into. It turns into an asset that isn't going to have any value. But anyway, back to the point, okay? So the FDI insurance, so back in the other housing bubble, 2011, they fixed it, okay? They needed $7 trillion. And so they needed like $15 trillion. So they do two different things. But the first thing they did was they took a bunch of all the junk bonds that would make people go bankrupt and therefore have to sell their assets and therefore sell their stock, which would drive all the stock prices down. So to keep the market from crashing, because $7 trillion worth of assets were going to disappear, instead they just guaranteed all that junk. So all the people that held junk didn't have to go bankrupt because they got saved from the bankruptcy, because the government just says we'll guarantee all that junk. So it's still junk, and the government's still paying for it in terms of they have to pay interest, some dividend. But it's all, it's not even imaginary in a sense. The asset is so valueless. It can't be, they don't, the company doesn't own any pence. So you're buying a stock that has no value, but you're buying it because it's guaranteed. The government will pay you for it, regardless of the fact that it has no value. So as long as people don't sell them, so that's part of the deal. You don't sell it. As long as they don't sell the stock, then the government does okay, because, it's just a place to hide another hunk of gigantic debt. And as long as people don't sell the stock and then oblige the government to pay them, it'll work. But there's no FDIC insurance. Okay, so you have an insurance fund that now has a $7 trillion liability, and it can't, it's got $368 billion. So it ain't going to be able to pay $7 trillion worth of liabilities with $30 billion. The insurance can't cover anything close to the outstanding demand that would exist in any crisis. So the run on the bank is now a reality again, just because FDIC insurance ain't going to be able to come to the rescue. But the only way they could do it would be to print cash, and if they print cash, that's hyperinflation, and so that won't work. So it's just, they can't guarantee the money. They can give you an IOU, maybe in 5 years the government can pay you, but it can't pay you now. That kind of thing will happen. So it's just a way of hiding more debt. And so the point really is the rich get richer. And as long as they keep owning imaginary assets, it's okay. As long as they don't start spending their money to buy the pens. Because as soon as they start buying the pens, that's when you're out of luck. You won't be able to afford them anymore. So when they start buying hard assets like farms and other assets that aren't as capable of rising, but they're not as capable of falling, then the economy is going to be in real big trouble, because then they're going to demand a higher price, because they had to pay a higher price for the company. So if you have to pay five times more for the company, then you're going to force the people to pay five times more for the product. That kind of thing will happen. And anyway, I'm just pointing this out just because it's not sustainable. And the real trick is there has to be somebody in charge when this happens. So when the bankruptcies start to happen and people start selling the assets and the money starts moving out of the imaginary assets, the bonds and the stocks and all that crap, and starts moving into the hard assets, there has to be somebody in charge who prevents the farms being taken over by people expecting a profit, all that kind of stuff. It has to be somebody to keep the infrastructure running. So there has to be something in the institution that says, no, you still have to make potato chips and sell them for this price. You still have to do this. It has to keep commodities from being hoarded, and by people who want hard assets. So it's not like a permanent situation. It's just a situation long enough to get the balance, to fix the balance again. You have to make a bunch of rich people not so rich, okay? And then everybody else with all their credit card debt and all this other crap, you also have to make them pay a little bit of a price for all that nonsense. So you have to do some balancing, okay, just to get through the bad patch. And then in a few years, you can go back to the same old crap again. And start all over, because the infrastructure is there. So you can understand, like, one day you can declare bankruptcy, but it's really that day after when you're bankrupt wasn't any different than the day before when you were still making product. And that's the part that has to be understood, is that the system, you know, of production and consumption can work regardless of who owns and who wants money. That part can be self-sustaining. And all of this, you know, greedy bastard part it doesn't have to sink the boat. So that's my only argument. None of these politicians seem to me that they have any clue of what they're going to do if, you know, something does stress the system and you end up with another 2011 when you're not going to have a whole lot of choices. See, they're hid $7 trillion of bad debt in FDIC insurance, and they hit another $7 trillion or so, $6 trillion, in the Fed. So the Federal Reserve has like $6 trillion in the bank accounts, and none of it is real. None of it's real cash. It's all checks that were never cashed, and the government's just saying, just pretend we paid you, just pretend it was taken care of. And as long as nobody asks for the hard cash, as long as you give them a piece of paper that says IOU, and they're happy with that, they're just pretending it's okay. When, no, it's another $7 trillion of liabilities, and if those people show up with the IOU saying, give me the damn money, the government's not going to have it. I mean, these are gigantic amounts of money where, you know, the government takes in maybe $2 trillion a year, and it would have an obligation of $6 or $7 trillion in 1 year, and obviously have no capacity to produce that much cash. Not even close. And still pay all the Social Security checks and all the other stuff. So anyway, I do like to throw a little of that kind of economic crap in here now, and I know it's, for a lot of people, not interesting. But, you know, the real economy is just made of a bunch of gimmicks and shenanigans, and most of it just to keep the rich getting richer. And but it is all vapor. It's, you know, the economy does produce real assets. It does make new buildings. It does make new factories. It does produce, but it's doing it at the liability of some people expecting in the future a gigantic paycheck, and there's not going to be anybody to pay it. All right, so this wasn't even on my agenda, you know. It just says, you know, you hear about these little controversies, and I really don't pay much attention anymore to any kind of news or you know, current events, because it's all same old, same old. And you know, this is just, you know, these reoccurring patterns of, you know, crisis. And it's all like, oh, yeah, we've been here and done this over and over again. So anyway, so there's the whole gay rights thing, okay, which shouldn't have been an issue, all right. So we grew up, we sort of regularized some of that stuff. And then the transsexual thing became, you know, the new issue, I guess. And it just seems to me that, you know, this, the part that seems same old is that people always grab or reach for too much. You know, they get a society to be, to accept and normalize, and then they expect everything's going to be just fine. You know, that you can shove nigga in their face and that's okay. We'll just shove nigga in your face all day. And, you know, you know, that's just breaking the rules in the sense that, well, how is that going to, that's, you know, that might work if everybody's 10 years old, but it's not going to work on somebody 75 years old. You know, that's just going to be provocative. And you can even go with the, you know, I don't want to even touch the subject, but, you know, the whole Israel pushback being way overdone, and it just makes the good guys into bad guys. And so this whole, you know, transsexual thing where you have some empathy for people, their identity's fucked up, they're unhappy with who they are, And you say, yeah, let's try to make this okay, you know. And then they just, you know, expect you to accept, you know, penises in the girls' room. And then they expect you to accept, you know, this whole Olympics crap where, you know, come on. It doesn't make any sense at all. I mean, the whole reason why there's men and women athletics is because the body types are completely different from birth. And it's genetic, and it's hormones, and it's all that crap. And it's just idiotic to say that somebody could be, you know, male for 20 years, and all of a sudden they're going to turn into a female. No, they can turn into something that can pass as, but they're still, you know, the chromosomes aren't lying. You can't change what you were maturated into and what advantages you have because of just that fact that you're of a certain sex means that you're a higher probability to have a higher body mass and a, you know, heavier bones and, you know, a better distribution of fat to muscle and all of that crap. And they're saying, why would they grab that? Why would they reach, say, that's on the table and that's something we're entitled to? Because it just makes it look, it's just something to find obnoxious. And then especially when you do it in women's boxing, it just makes it even look even worse. So you have some man, okay, who feels like a woman, but wants to beat the shit out of women. Sorry. How do you make sense out of that? I can't make any sense out of it. So, you know, I watch it and I say, okay, you know, I have empathy for all these kind of liberal causes and all that kind of stuff, but this just turns you off. It just says, what are you people about? This is what you care about? This is that important to you? And you really think you're entitled to all of this? I mean, you want free health, you want this, you want this, you want all this stuff. You're not worth it, frankly. Sorry. You know, you're way too high maintenance. You're worse than the rich, okay? You extravagant identity people. You know, this is just, you know, it gets to be just kind of obnoxious and, you know, it's almost rude and insulting, you know, to pretend, you know, that it's okay to have this huge, gigantic, cheaty advantage. And that's all it is. It's a gigantic cheating advantage. So why would anybody applaud that or think that's a great idea? It's really stupid. Now, I have no use for the whole Olympics anyway. Fuck it. It's just such a waste of money. We should be encouraging people to compete in intelligence contests, not fucking silly jump up and down bullshit, or especially not beat each other up contests. I mean, that's just too fucking ridiculous. So it just does become kind of funny that, you know, these are liberals defending the right of men to, you know, partially augment their maleness and then go beat up women. Sorry. Anyway, so, you know, like I said, they've lost all, you know, it's like the causes are just gone and, you know, it's just I don't know what to say. You know, in the other context of this whole liberal movement is all of a sudden crime shouldn't be punished. And it doesn't matter how nasty and violent and shitty you are. No, let's just give you a sandwich and say, don't do it again. What the fuck? You know, I can't understand why there's all of a sudden some empathy for criminals, who, especially violent criminals. I mean, where was that on the liberal agenda? I don't remember that being on the liberal agenda. Let's be nice to violent criminals. Let's defend them. You know, foreign violent criminals, even worse. I mean, they come here and they don't have any respect for our culture or, you know, the civilization. People have died in wars to protect, defend, and build. And shit, you know, I don't get how that's a liberal cause. Destroying civilization. Yeah, that's our number one agenda. You know, it's just pathetic. Tragic. very disappointing. That's all I can say. I mean, I Republicans are about one thing, making rich people richer. So every bit of rhetoric, everything they say, it doesn't have anything to do with anything but making sure rich people get richer, and even more importantly, that inheritors get richer, that inheritance is part of the game. So I guess I'll rag about that, because that was on my list. You know, this whole idea of, you know, you could sell the idea of a deserve should have something to do with it, you know. So you have the deserve party. I called mine fairness first, right? And, you know, that would be the agenda. And, the obvious fact is that this is a competition. And we should reward people that go to medical school and do this and do that, to work for acquiring skills and being useful to society and diligently doing that. That should be rewarded. Okay. And nothing else, pretty much, right? I mean, it's really, that should be the game, is to acquire useful skills and to apply them for a fair amount of time. And that should be rewarded heavily, okay? And everything else shouldn't be. And especially, just having the right parents is a huge advantage. So you can go to better schools and you can, eat better and you can have more rich, go to Europe. You can do all kinds of things because you're raised rich. But what you shouldn't be able to do is cheat, okay, frankly, by just staying rich. And it really, it's just, again, it's just the ugliness of an unfair fight. I don't know how people can defend this idea that their kids are better than other kids, and they're going to prove it by buying them victory. It's just so obnoxious to deserve having something to do with it. It's obnoxious to their whole merit pay concept, that it's, they're going to tell other people to pull up their bootstraps, and then they're going to pull up their kids' bootstraps for them. What the fuck is that? So, I mean, you don't have to abolish it altogether. I'm just saying, obviously, these gigantic fortunes should not be inherited. Human beings should have to pay the freight for being human beings, and they shouldn't be allowed to get in an easy boy chair with a 400 horsepower engine and just fly across the finish line. because there's so much we can't, where we can't fix it. People are born disabled, they're broken. We can't fix it. We can't make it fair for them. We can help. You can give them what little you can afford to give them to try to fix it and make it better, but you can't. And that sucks. But this is a circumstance we can fix. We don't have to have these unfairnesses. We can do something to, keep it within reason. Because all of that money, again, those are all assets. Those are all reward tickets. And if you waste them on, 1% of the population, then you're not going to be able to encourage the other people to do better, because you wasted all the tickets on you gave all the carrots to two horses, and the other eight horses are going to say, well, if there ain't no carrots, I ain't running. They're not going to bother racing for no carrots. And that's the real problem. We create an economy where, so many people could be encouraged to do more and to work harder, but there's too little in it for them. You can't live on minimum wages, any kind of decent life. And, it's what we've chosen to do, is to squander a bunch of resources feeding the high maintenance, useless turds. Again, all those, it's even the education thing. A lot of these rich people send their kids to the elitist colleges and all the rest of it, and they don't do anything with that education. So you've taken something, that could be very productive, and you've given it to something that just eats it and just, shits it, and that's it. It just doesn't go anywhere. Got no value out of it, because they're not going to use the education. they're going to go out to, like, on some African safari and shoot a giraffe in the neck. It's just so dismal. So again, it's just this whole idea of my kid thing. It's just, so it's all part of these pro-creationists, these pro-lifers, and they're really just so nepotistic and caught up in their own bigotries and, you know, very poor judgment not to realize that the property that matters is something being a child. Not being your child, just being a child is what needs feeding. It needs to be fed, okay, in all ways. And yours doesn't need it more, you know. And yours doesn't earn it more. And yours doesn't deserve more. And it's just a fact. So anyway, I know it's a subject, just, you know, I don't understand why most people can't see the gross unfairness of creating a civilization that rewards people for being born to the right parents. I don't know why somebody thinks that's a good idea. All right, another thing I don't understand, so this is more like the usual video. The modern mystic, you know, said the words, the magic words that just trigger me, that he doesn't believe that our brains can do any objective thinking. And you're just like, what are you talking about? I mean, you know, I 90% of what my brain is doing has to be considered objective, in the sense that I'm identifying a color. It's not an emotional thing. I don't know red is, I don't know the difference between blue and red because I have some emotional reaction. I observe them. I pattern match them. I have the word blue in my brain. I do some real objective, logical thinking. There's no subjective. I mean, the fact that I can manifest an emotion over almost anything. You know, I can find the number two. Ooh, it's so sexy. Maybe I'll get aroused when I see the number two. Doesn't mean I can't understand the concept of two. No, that this little thing here has two-ness, and I can have something over here that has two-ness. If I put two two-nesses together, I got a four-ness. That's objective, okay? It's just a mechanical process of putting facts together. You observe something, you note it in your brain. Blue is different than red. Then you look for some other thing that matches that pattern, matches that difference, matches in some way, has a connection. The word rhymes with it, or some other thing. That's not a subjective. That's not emotional. It's just your brain processing and saying what in this image matches something in one of my previous images and making connections between these things. And so it's just so, it's one of these things, again, where I just say, what is causing that? What is causing a human being to sit there and understand, you know, the guy does a lot of objective thinking, no doubt. He plans things, he writes, you know, I'm sure every time he builds something, he builds things. I'm sure he draws it and he has numbers in there and he has, oh yeah, I want this high. That's not emotional. He knows that it has to fit into some space. And so it can't be more than 3 feet high. It's not subjective that he figures out, oh, well, if it can't be 3 feet high, it has to be something less than 3 feet. So he can figure that out. So why does he say it? And that's the part that just, you just say, is everybody just some sort of nutty religious kook? You know, and they just can't, you know, I don't know. I mean, what would motivate someone to say there's no such thing as an objective statement or an objective observation or an objective, because all objective means is that you're not biased. And clearly, we all the time have emotional responses to people. I mean, if somebody could emotionally respond to this shirt. I mean, statistically, red cars are in more accidents because people react to the color red. And, you know, so, you know, that's the theory anyway. It has, on the margins, our emotions affect some of our judgments. Sometimes we judge people by how pretty or ugly they are. That happens all the time. But we're talking about when we're trying to fit something into a space. We're talking about so much of what we do just has to do with a simple analysis. Is it heavy? Is it light? You know, is it fat? Is it tall? I mean, you know, they're not questions that can have subjective answers. They can only have factual answers, you know, answers that are based on a whole litany of facts that you have to fit your description in. It has to fit in this container, okay, of the existing context. And our brain does that very well. We figure out, we can, you know, how rickety the bridge is, and we can figure out how to distribute our weight, and we can figure out all kinds of things. We can do the analysis, and it's not going to be some subjective thing that's going to tell us it's safe or it's unsafe. It's going to be doing a lot of objective reasoning and logic regarding what we know about the world and how things work and how they deteriorate and how they evolve and all of that stuff. So, you know, it's just this reoccurring subject where there's these people who think there's no objective statements that can be made about existence, you know, the universe even. And you're like, how can you say that? It's we can objectively observe there's a Jupiter. I don't got some emotional problem, stating that, yeah, Jupiter exists because I've seen the images of the telescope and blah, 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 and I know Jupiter exists. I'm not subjectively stating this statement. I'm stating it because I have a whole bunch of facts that were gleaned that point to no other reasonable conclusion, you know. And it really bugs me. So this goes back to the vegan Gaines thing. You know, he's one of these nihilists. He doesn't think we can make a value judgment. And we're sitting here. You know, ironically, they say we have all this subjectivity. So certainly they know we feel. And not to say I know that feeling bad sucks. And I know that feeling not bad is good. How is that not an accurate description of reality? How am I being dishonest? How am I being subjectively fooled? There's no subjectively. I wasn't fooled by my feelings. You know, they can't fool you. I mean, you can't miss it. You know, you can't miss the difference between feeling good and feeling bad. So it's just ridiculous, you know, that we can't figure out that that's a perfectly reasonable place to begin, that if something causes something to feel bad, I can understand that, well, it's a bad, you know, if we can do the same thing without something feeling bad, let's do it that way. That's just reasoning. That's just being logical, because I know the bad exists, and I know what bad is made out of, and it's made out of one thing, feeling like shit. There's nothing else that a bad thing could possibly ever be made out of than something feeling like shit. Yeah. That sort of gets into the life and death thing, which is also, somebody I've known for years, you know, died today. And, yeah, you know, it was a couple, and I have to imagine, because, you know, I wasn't there. But just how it's just so, it's just that tragic end thing, okay, where you're just like, how can people, you know, keep thinking, let's keep doing this, you know, let's keep doing this, get attached, have fun, and then get crushed by a steamroller. Until you fix that getting crushed by a steamroller thing, there's just, you know, there's no point, okay, in playing the game, because, yeah, tomorrow's always show up, and you're going to need tomorrow to be not the day you get crushed by a steamroller. You're going to keep clinging to the hope, okay, that today's not the day you get crushed by the steamroller, and it's kind of an insidious. And then the whole idea of, you know, letting it creep up, you know, as I'm experiencing, you know, where you're getting of an age where, you know, the fuck you that's on the dice, you know, it's more and more likely I'm going to roll fuck you. And, you know, it's just nasty. And you know it's going to happen, too. So you know, too, that, you know, with all these couples, you know that one of them has to go first. Well, they didn't have to, but you know what I mean, most of the time. And, you know, the poor, I mean, you don't want to be either one. You don't want to be the one who goes first, and you don't want to be the one who has to deal with the other one going first. Because it's going to be really rough. And I just, you know, that's a non-starter, you know, from my perspective in having a conversation about procreation. Where you're just like, no, not under these circumstances. How can I be procreation when you're going to create this, you know, brutal, horrid, you know, when you know the war, you know, it's like if you knew World War II was part of the package, you know, you had to have it, and you're going to redo the adventure, and you know that you have to stick World War II in the adventure somewhere, you know, or the Civil War, that's not a non-starter. It's not for you. I mean, the fact that, you know, we are caught up in momentum and this thing just goes, okay, and there hasn't been any capacity to do anything but go in the past, well, now we can talk about it. Now we can, you know, have a real conversation about whether go is the right button to press. And certainly as a civilization, we can understand that, well, maybe it's time to wind this down. And there's lots of good reasons, global warming, lots of reasons to recognize this isn't heading in the right direction. And you're doing things that aren't sustainable, and you're going to force people in the future to get run over by steamrollers. You're making more steamrollers, and so why not, you know, just do the responsible thing and say, yeah, let's quit doing this, you know, all of these schemes, you know, that require growth, and recognize that no, we can't do that feeding off of growth thing. We can't pretend that the land, there's more land to occupy, and there's more resources to steal. And all of that crap, and you have to have some kind of system where, yeah, it's sustainable. And, you know, that's certainly, from my perspective, is a first step to recognizing that the whole thing doesn't need to run at all, and it accomplishes nothing, because we've written this story over and over and over again. Romeo and Juliet has been played out in real life, you know, millions, billions of times. You know, and it always has to have, you know, the real story isn't the, and they lived happily ever after. The real story has always got this shit in it. And some of the shit is a lot heavier than other shit. And you're just saying, well, why are people so reluctant to even just concede? Yeah, I get it. It's not good enough. Yeah. At least concede that, you know, it's very expensive, just for the delusion in a human's brain that it's worth it. And that's all it is. It's just a delusion in a brain that says it's worth it, because you can't reasonably describe how it's worth it. You can't use facts and explain how you're not paying too much. At least I don't think you can use facts and say you're not paying too much. Because I don't think even these aggressive pro-lifers have no limit to how much, how brutal. I mean, you know, it's the Christopher Reeves thing, you know. If that was your fate, you're still going to be procreation if that's the life you had to live, you know, where you have it all and then the next day you have nothing. you know, everything's a struggle, just breathing. Oof. That doesn't scare the fuck out of you. Anyway, you know, it's just amazing. Because I don't get that. Yeah. You know. I don't get it as possible. I just don't know how your brain can be that deluded and fucktarded to sit there and say, I don't care if you poke my eyes out. I mean, it'll be just fine. Shit. Yeah, it'll still be worth it. Yeah, no, come on. It doesn't make any sense to me. All right, I'll be back. All right, well, I did look at my notes, which I probably shouldn't have done. They're all over the place. But I did, I wrote down human farming and then, human mills, where, like puppy mills, where people just aren't, just as the gluttonous rich are a problem, the insanely cheap poor are also a problem. Like people who run a puppy mill or something, for a marginal income, they'll torture a bunch of dogs and really are cats in substandard conditions and have huge attrition. And for the purpose of breeding, they will actually, do an awful lot of killing, culling, of their pedigrees. And it's all quite disgusting. And, there's human beings, these procreationers, who just don't take this obligation seriously. So they don't do much to ensure that their own physical character is good enough to reproduce, that they have made a good combination between them and somebody else that's likely to create a good breed. And they end up with a bunch of broken puppies. And, they'll just be tormented. And they're not going to give those dogs any kind of training. They're not going to, civilize them, connect them. They're not going to have enough human contact. And they're probably just going to end up being a dog that tries to bite somebody's face off. So you don't gain anything. It's just a huge degrade of, because we have some sort of empathy for poverty or something. So now you can be irresponsible and an asshole. So again, it just doesn't seem to me that should be a liberal value. The liberal should be defending the right of every human to be given a minimum good standard, not a minimum that's substandard. Okay, the minimum shouldn't be, we won't let your parents molest you. That shouldn't be the minimum. It should be a lot better than that. The civilization really just doesn't care to ensure those minimums and keeps subsidizing, trying to pay people to make a bigger mess in the world. We're paying them to build their puppy mill. We're subsidizing it. Instead of discouraging it and regulating it and forcing people to have permits and stuff, which is just not good for civilization, and it's not kind or nice. It's just stupid. All right, well, it popped into my head, so I might as well say something about it. So the tranny thing, there's another word, right? The better word than that, right? People aren't just transitioning, there's something else when they finish. I don't know why I can't think of it. But anyway, the reorientation people. So what do you think the odds are that some woman who becomes a man, becomes something, the argument just kind of fails because you can't give her testicles. All you're doing is saying, well, here's one hormone, one of the hormones, and that's it. And say that's being a man. Yeah. But anyway, and it's, you know, what do you think the odds are of a woman competing in a male event at the Olympics and winning? I mean, you know, come on. I mean, there's no chance, right? I mean, what's the event going to be? I mean, you can't, it's hard, you can't really even figure out what event it could possibly be. So, I don't know. You know, my brain just started telling jokes, you know, about, you know, how many chairs you can sit on and break. But anyway, yeah, I just don't know. So anyway, I just can't. It's all these, you know, it's all this stuff. These protesters don't win the argument. They just make the argument look stupid. I mean, you know, I was always against all the wars against the Muslims, but I was never pro-Islam. And it's like they've turned it into some sort of, we must be pro-Islam. When, why do I have to be any of that? I don't have to be pro-Jewish religion, you know, pro-Judaism. I can certainly defend Jews. I can certainly defend Arabs. But I don't have to like Islamic Arabs, and I don't have to like Jewish Jews. It's ridiculous to say I can't make cultural distinctions and recognize good culture versus bad culture, good ideas versus bad ideas, good beliefs versus bad beliefs. It's just bullshit that they've converted racism into culturalism and said it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. It's really not. It's not about ethnicity. It's not about race. It's about being a defender of shit and being a defender of shitheads. So again, if the foreigner's going to come over here and all be let us out of jail, even when we, you know, try to stab you in the neck, fuck them. You know, that's bullshit. And you're just, again, and, you know, they're not doing the progressive ideal any good, okay, by smearing it in shitty nonsense. You know, but anyway. I mean, I never was a big fan of protesters. They always look like they're doing the cause no good. They're just making it look stupid. All right, so another negative anecdote that just popped into my head. Okay, so today, again, Sunday, weekends, and this thing with people and their music and the fact that they have to force everyone else to listen to it. And you're like, where did they grow up? How do they live? I mean, they don't notice any of this. I mean, there's no such thing as an obnoxious sound to them. They aren't disturbed or irritated. You know, if their computer makes too much noise, it's okay with them. You know, the fan's banging on something, dang, 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 dang. It doesn't irritate the fuck out of them. You know, and especially when it's in a foreign language, you know, it's not even semi-connected to this culture, or, you know, and they just blare it, and they don't even think about how they might be fucking up somebody else's picnic. I mean, it's just such an obvious kind of, you know, noise pollution is just so kind of obvious. And it's like, not to be aware at all that that's like farting. It's not polite. It's nasty. It's rude. Oh, you know, and then the speeding thing. And, you know, there's so many. You're just saying, well, why is there any indulgence for this at all? We are, you know, I should just be able to take a picture of the car, you know, going 50 or 60 miles an hour down the street, and the cops give the picture to the cops, and they ought to just go out and shoot the car, you know, if not the person driving it, just shoot the car. You know, I don't get it, you know. I don't get why it's acceptable, tolerated. It's nonsense. And it's the civilization we exist in. So the subject of the video was sort of going to be on this more technical aspect of how, as a living thing, we're just reflexes. You know, so I could argue that we could go back to a paramecium. So this is another, you know, modern mystic agrees with me. Okay, that's all there is. There's just a bunch of little reflexes, a bunch of little paramecium, you could almost argue, are running the show. They're being used as the little bits inside of our brain to establish what our beliefs are going to be and what we're going to say and how we're going to function is all in how they've been arranged or programmed and triggered. You know, they're just little triggers. One of them has to trigger, and then that triggers these others to do their thing, and that triggers these to do that thing, and that's all there is. And you can just go back, you know, to the first little paramecium that wiggled its tail when the sun came out, or when the sun went down, you know, depending on the circumstance. And, you know, the evolution of that mechanism is just what we are a product of. And you go back to the fish and all the rest of these things, and they all have these more simple triggers that control their which way they swim and what they do, and we have just piled a whole bunch of other triggers on top of that based on, you know, what Fred Flintstone did, you know, or whatever we grew up on as maturating information, you know, what stories were in our textbooks and, you know, what bullshit was in the environment and what personal experiences we had, and that all adds up to a bunch of triggers that give us, each one of us, an individual experience with everything. So for some people, I'm sure some of you out there, you always saw the word procreation as pro-creation. And I didn't see it until yesterday, well, this morning. So, I mean, I didn't even notice, you know, procreation. You know, it's just so obvious it's procreation. You know, I just thought of it as some kind of baby flying out of vagina thing or something. I didn't really think about it as an ideology and as a, I thought of it as a verb, as an event, not as a statement, a philosophical statement. But it's right there in front of you. You know, procreators are pro-creation. Anyway, and so, yeah, so, you know, it's all reflexes. So for each one of us, stop signs mean different things, lines on the road, how gnarly the asphalt is. We all notice different things. We all get it, you know, we all have different responses to different things. I watch it here because it is kind of funny that the new urbanites, or whatever you want to call people living in these these, I don't know what to call, you know, suburban, urban, you know, it's something in between the two. It's not a city, you know, but it's, everything is smashed together. But anyway, high density, let's call it, diverse, okay. They're all insanely bugophobic, and you're just like, you know, these are people whose origin, you know, is, you know, countries where, you know, the place is crawling with bugs. And you're just like, how did that happen? I mean, even if you grew up here, you know, you would have some sort of connection to, you know, your roots in the bug-infested world. And why wouldn't you feel kind of like Tarzan or something? Like, yeah, I can deal with that. You know, I'm Tarzan. Son of Tarzan, you know, so I, you know, not a big deal. And it's just kind of funny that they just, you know. So anyway, so I guess that's all life experience and stuff. I guess they didn't do enough camping, or I don't know, or they didn't really do camping. They just did camping where they were on their iPhone in the trailer or something. I don't know. So it's, but anyway, the real point here is that, yeah, so we're all just these reflexes, and the real burden is trying to match our trigger points. The words trigger us, we say things, we have statements we make, and we got to find some way to to build upon the ones that agree and try to figure out why there's ones that don't agree. You know, why you think this square is bigger than this square. Some kind of thing like that. Some observation for you that I'm not seeing. I'm seeing it the other way around. You know, somehow we're at different angles, and the it's distorting the view enough where we're looking at the same thing and calling it two different things, bat, bird, you know, kind of idea. And so that's the dilemma, you know, and I'm still don't have a solution for it. But there should be mechanisms where, you know, it would be best if there were, you know, instead of Olympics, there was institutions where these kind of debates and this hashing things out and this kind of, you know, vlogger dome kind of idea that I tried in the past, you know, where the idea is you have two ideas in and only one idea comes out, you know, where you really force it to be, you force it to get beaten to death. You force there to be a real conclusion, not some silly, well, that's 10 minutes, time's up, we're done. Finish the fight. They have to stay in there until when I'm starved to death, whatever it takes, if they won't fight. Some kind of mechanism to, resolve a clear image and to be able to write something, you know, write the word blue and write the word purple, I think, and write the word red and, you know, green. Define things so there isn't all this mush and indecision and compromise, because it ruins, you get nothing out of it. The compromise is stops the things from rolling. So you make so many compromises that the thing doesn't even work anymore, because you've pulled its wheels off and, you know, bent its steering wheel, and, you know, you can't drive the compromise. You know, it's such a monstrosity. And it's, you know, and again, you know, from my perspective, this is really just a defense of the truth, because frankly, the truth will win these arguments if it's allowed to have them. If you're forced to have them, the truth will win, because there is enough facts and it is clear. You know, like the fact that there's no God. It's just so easy to deconstruct that as just a bunch of human wishful thinking, and having nothing to do with a fact or discovery or inspection or fair analysis or any kind of objective reasoning. There isn't any, because all of the evidence points to it being just fables, just stories made up by assholes who, either running from the truth or wishing to use a mechanism to control others, control the mob, keep it distracted, something like that. All right, so it's probably enough of a video and such. So, it's a little random, and maybe I'll try to make some more focused videos on subjects related to the points made in this video, but who knows if it's anything there. I think this whole discussion about what people have a right to, you know, is interesting, just because some people think they have a right to be a lot more expensive, you know, than they're ever, you know, to consume more than they're ever going to produce. And that's kind of, I'm not saying we shouldn't allow you to fail, but don't pretend failure is success. That's bullshit. Oh, there's just so much stuff, you know, but yeah, it gets into all this politically correct crap. So some of these subjects you just can't touch because people are so triggered, so defensive, that you're just going to be called a name and just some cheap frickin' label, when no, you're really just trying to make it understood what part you don't understand about what it is they're defending. But anyway, well, we know how it goes. People are just cheaters, and that's part of why you need to have a trial. That's why you need to make a spectacle out of it, so the cheaters can be revealed for what they are, and be shown that they don't really have a counter argument, and they're just trying to pretend, that the whole, you win because you assassinated their character rather than their ideas. It's not about the messenger, it's about the message. That kind of thing. Anyway, so till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot.